You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me for our Wednesday episode, my co-host in crime, Rob Rand. Glad to have you listening in, whether this is your first time checking out Locked On Seahawks or whether you're a regular listener. I'll even give a shout out to a few of our new listeners that have been following another writer by the name of Corbin Smith. Now you can see why I did not write the article that you were yelling at me about yesterday. Anyway, on today's episode, we're going to be starting our 90-man roster breakdown, looking at six players because the Seahawks actually have 91 players that are on their roster currently. And we're going to be looking at Pro Football Focus's defensive rankings going into the 2021 season. Make sure to check out Locked On's Peacock and Williamson every Monday through Friday. Brian and Matt give you the national perspective all around the NFL, covering all the latest news and insight in every game, team, and move around the NFL. Get your picks, previews, and much more every weekday with the Peacock and Williamson podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. Normally, when the calendar flips to June, you don't see coaching changes in the NFL, but that's just what the Seahawks are going to have to deal with here, as a key member of their staff has officially bolted for Jacksonville. Stop if you've heard this before. They've now had multiple assistants leave this offseason to join Urban Meyer's staff in Jacksonville. Nick Sorensen being the latest to leave. He served as the secondary coach for the Seahawks since 2017. Last year, he earned the title of nickel coach as well. So this is a pretty significant loss for the Seahawks when you consider how important defense is in Pete Carroll's philosophy. To be having a coach that's been here since 2013, that's been a special teams assistant, worked his way up to being a secondary coach, for him to leave at this stage of the offseason, it's going to be difficult to find a replacement.
It is. I think that's just one of the things that happen. You know, when you've had the success the Seahawks have had and you are a consistent playoff contender, I think that the Seahawks, however, are in a pretty good position to absorb this loss. I think it's something that obviously when you have a head coach like Pete Carroll, who has been around since it feels like the dawn of time when it comes to football, then of course he has lost so many assistant coaches over the years. The fact that Pete Carroll has, you know, that's where he cut his teeth, in the NFL and in college football as being a defensive backs coach originally. The fact that Seattle has a former player who has, returned to be a coach in Deshaun Shedd, I think that they are pretty good in that regard as well. And then on the special team side, another former player, Larry Izzo, really, in my opinion at least, developed into an absolute superstar as a special teams coordinator a year ago when Brian Schneider was one of those defections to the Jacksonville Jaguars. So I agree with you, Corbin, it is a significant loss. And it is a loss at a kind of an odd time here in June. But at the same time, I think that when you have a coach as experienced as Pete Carroll, then you have that in your back pockets a little bit easier. And again, you have the former players who are now serving as head coach or now serving as positional coaches. I think that's going to make it that much easier for the current players to be able to adapt because their coaches know what it's like to actually be lacing it up and play on the football field rather than just preaching in front of a whiteboard.
It's ironic because Sorensen is going to be replacing, as you mentioned, Brian Schneider, who was with the Seahawks basically the entire Pete Carroll era. He came from USC with Carroll onto Seattle's coaching staff, and he served as the coordinator all the way through the beginning of last year, and then he took a leave of absence. Larry Izzo was named the interim coordinator, and Seattle had one of the best special teams units in the league. So the Seahawks decided we're going to move forward with Izzo as our coordinator, and Schneider moved on and signed on as the special teams coordinator with the Jaguars. And here we are before the season even gets started, and he took another leave of absence from the Jaguars. I hope that for his sake and his family's sake that everything's okay. That doesn't look like a good situation to me, but the Jaguars needed to find a replacement quickly, and so they went right back to where they seemingly have gone all offseason, and that's Seattle's coaching staff, because Brian Schottenheimer, who was fired as the offensive coordinator, quickly became the passing game coordinator, and then the guy who was calling plays before Schottenheimer got to Seattle, Daryl Bevel, he's the offensive coordinator in Jacksonville, and now you have Sorensen on the staff, and so there's a number of players that defected from Seattle to Jacksonville as well. That's going to be a really fun game on Halloween just for that reason. It's going to feel like the Seahawks are playing Seahawks East with the number of defections that they have on their coaching staff and on the roster. But Sorensen was a 10-year vet in the NFL. He played for the Browns, the Saints, and the Rams. I believe he also played for the Jaguars briefly. So he's going to be coaching for a team that he played for. And so you look at the fact that he's been coaching under Pete Carroll since 2013. This is a great opportunity for him. And Pete Carroll has never been a coach that's going to be upset about somebody on his staff taking a bigger opportunity. The advantage that he is going to have is that, as you mentioned, with the fact that he's coached for so long, he's got a lot of connections. He should be able to find somebody to help fill the void. I don't think Deshaun Shedd, being in the first year as a coach, is going to be ready to jump up to secondary coach quite yet, but maybe Pete Carroll has the confidence in him to be able to do that right away. If not, he's got connections to be able to go out and get somebody. Typically this time of year, your NFL and college staffs are pretty well set. So it's going to be an interesting thing to watch over the next few weeks to see how the Seahawks move forward filling that position, if they work internally or if they bring somebody else in from elsewhere. We'll just have to see how it plays out. When we come back in the second quarter, last week we looked at Pro Football Focus's offensive rankings position by position. Now with the defensive rankings coming out, Rob and I are going to be checking out where some of Seattle's best defensive players stack up compared to the rest of the league. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it is now impossible to stock all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the counterman orders the parts on his computer, choosing the only brand his warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com and in your pocket. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. Best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car and truck. Write "Locked On" in their "How Did You Hear About Us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing, and you can track all the action at BetOnline. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including Major League Baseball, the NBA, NHL, and all of the UFC MMA action. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Wednesday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined as always by Rob Rang. Last week, Pro Football Focus has been slowly revealing their top 32 players at each position. We had all of the offensive groups at that point. So, Rob, you and I, we get way too much joy out of this, looking at grades. And so we love to analyze these rankings each year. And so last week we did offense. Now we finally, with the cornerbacks and safeties being revealed yesterday, have all of the defensive position groups that we can now comb through and share our thoughts on which players got accurately ranked, which ones got snubbed, and all of that fun stuff. And so let's get to it. We'll start with the defensive tackle group. Jaron Reed, interestingly, was not on Pro Football Focus's top 32. Now that he's a Kansas City Chief, he was not listed as one of the top 32, but the Seahawks did have a player make the list, Puna Ford, coming in at number 19. And honestly, that seems about right. I don't often say this about these rankings, but this is one that I actually can somewhat agree with, because even though he improved a lot as a pass rusher last year, we still haven't seen the sack and quarterback hit production yet for him to be a top 10 defensive tackle, but it looks like he's on the verge of becoming that going into his fourth NFL season.
I agree with you. I think that 19th out of 32 defensive tackles is a fair placement for Puna Ford, considering how disruptive that he is against both the run and the pass. I think it's comical, frankly, that the Jaron Reed was not listed among the 32. The fact how quickly he signed with the Kansas City Chiefs, a team that's had a little bit of success over the last couple of years, might know something about talent. I think that the fact that Jaron Reed wasn't included in that is, again, a little bit laughable. But at the same time, I think, again, going back to the actual Seahawks and Puna Ford, I think that this is more or both the reflection of where Puna Ford currently is and what his upside is. Clearly, he is the classic kind of penetrator that you're looking for that is really, really important in today's NFL. I'm very curious to see if Puna Ford is able to build on his 19th overall ranking a year from now.
And he's been so good as a run defender ever since he came into the league undrafted out of Texas. He's in the 85th percentile for run defense grades in Pro Football Focus over the last 3 years. He had the sixth highest grade in the league last season. And so some might be saying, why is he ranked 19th? But it really boils down to the pass rushing production. But I think with him getting more opportunities to play the three-tech role now with Jaron Reed being in Kansas City, I think we have seen him just barely scratch the surface of what he's capable of doing as a pass rusher. I could see him breaking out with 4, 5, 6 sacks this year, along with remaining one of the better run-defending defensive tackles in the NFC. Now, one of the bigger snubs for the Seahawks defensively, they didn't have anybody listed in their defensive end rankings. And I think if you would have talked to both of us last October before they traded for Carlos Dunlap and said, hey, in May, Pro Football Focus isn't going to have any defensive ends from Seattle on their top 32, we both be like, well, yeah, duh, because the Seahawks had one of the worst pass rushes in the NFL. But we saw what Carlos Dunlap did, the effect that he had on everyone else. And he obviously was very productive in his 8 games with the Seahawks in the regular season. He had 7 sacks in those 8 games. And the Seahawks had more sacks as a team than any team in the NFL from week 9 on. That was the first game that he played for them in Buffalo. And so, to me, a player that has been as good as Carlos Dunlap has been for more than a decade and continued to play well after coming to Seattle, I understand that he wasn't playing much for Cincinnati and was struggling the first half of the season a year ago, but I still think that a strong argument can be made as an all-around defensive end that he's one of the 32 best in the league.
I 100% agree with you, buddy. Yeah, I mean, I think that it's, again, kind of comical. I'll give PFF a little bit of a pass here. Well, I think that anybody who watched Carlos Dunlap in Cincinnati the first half of the season, then it would be easy to ignore him in terms of ranking the top 32 defensive ends. However, in watching a Seahawks squad that made a historic turnaround on the defensive side of the ball, and a huge part of that was Carlos Dunlap with his ability to create pressure, not only with the 7 sacks that he himself was credited with, but how it contributed to Puna Ford, to Jaron Reed, to LJ Collier, to all these, Alton Robinson, all these other defensive linemen for the Seahawks, and how they were able to turn into the NFC West champions with a 12-4 record. It's not like they squeaked in. I really think that Carlos Dunlap should have been ranked among the top 32. I think it's flat out a little bit embarrassing that he was not ranked among the top 32. And I'm curious, very much like Puna Ford, I'm curious to see if Carlos Dunlap's ranking changes a year from now.
Yeah, full season in Seattle's defense with some of the other pieces that they have added around him, re-signing other players like Benson Mayoa, signing Kerry Hyder, Puna Ford and him playing off of each other. Of course, there's a chance that we could see somebody else emerge in that group as well. Maybe Alton Robinson takes on a bigger role. Daryl Taylor could still see some reps at Leo. They've added pieces around him. I think that's just going to further accentuate his skill set and give him the best chance to be successful in his first full season with the Seahawks. So there's a good chance that next year, this time, that even though he's going to be getting to be an older player, that we could see him on that top 32. Now, at linebacker, the Seahawks have 2 players in the top 15. That's not surprising to me at all. Now, you and I differ a little bit on evaluating Bobby Wagner's 2020 season. I would be in agreement with him being at spot number one or number two. Maybe Fred Warner can be in front of him on that list. I think that you could maybe call them 1A and 1B. But I still think Bobby Wagner is the class of that linebacker position. And Pro Football Focus agrees with me. And I think one of the big reasons that I still have him at number one is his pass rushing effectiveness. He had 23 quarterback pressures last year. The Seahawks were more aggressive blitzing him, partially out of necessity in the first half because their front line wasn't generating pressure. But he had 138 tackles, so he was still among league leaders, bringing ball carriers down. He had 8 passes defensed. Passer rating against him was back in the 80s, just 9.4 yards per attempt against him in coverage. So he made major strides after a down season in coverage the year before. So I still think Bobby Wagner absolutely deserves to be in that top spot at his 10th NFL season. I think he's still playing at an elite level. And I was happy to see KJ Wright, especially given the fact that he's still unsigned, that Pro Football Focus gave him enough respect to put him at number 14, which honestly, that feels about right to me. I don't know that he is a top 10 linebacker in the NFL at this point, but he had such a good year last year, only player in the league with double-digit tackles for loss and passes defensed. He moved positions and really thrived in the Sam linebacker spot. He was the most consistent defender on Seattle's team. So those two players, I actually agree with Pro Football Focus's assessment on both of them. I like Wagner at number one, and I'm happy to see KJ Wright at 14, and I hope, whether in Seattle or somewhere else, he finally gets a reasonable offer here for the 2021 season.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with KJ Wright's ranking in within the top 15 linebackers in the NFL. I think that the positional versatility and just his ability to play multiple roles in Seattle, not just different positions, but as you just mentioned, with his ability to create tackles for loss, as well as create pass deflections, pass interceptions, things of that nature, playing a completely different role than he had been asked to play previously. I think that KJ Wright deserves that recognition. And like John Schneider, I am stunned that the KJ Wright has not yet been signed to an NFL team. I think that's frankly a mistake by the 32 different NFL teams out there, including the one in Seattle that knows him better than anybody. Bobby Wagner, I thought, had dropped down significantly a year ago. If we're just looking at the 2020 season, we're ranking the top linebackers. To me, San Francisco's Fred Warner was significantly better, in my opinion, than Bobby Wagner, or frankly, than any other linebacker in the NFL. I think that you could look at what's going on in Chicago, what's going on in Tampa Bay, and see some other terrific linebacker play. I thought Bobby Wagner's numbers reflect that he is still a very effective linebacker, but the best in the league. I just disagree. I think that you could mention 4 or 5 different linebackers who are right there with Bobby Wagner. And there's just way too many times that if you really watch closely, you will see some missed tackles from Bobby Wagner. And for a guy who's getting paid as much as he is, who has the buildup and Pro Football Focus and all those others out there who rank players, I don't know what they're watching. Because I saw too many mistakes from Bobby Wagner a year ago. Now, I'm not going to suggest that I know all the different calls that Seattle made. I think he made an excellent point about how Seattle was using Wagner a little bit differently a year ago and asking him to rush the passer. And he was very effective in that regard. However, in the game that Seattle lost, I promise you, I can pick out some plays where Bobby Wagner flat out missed tackle opportunities or was blocked to the point of oblivion by offensive linemen getting to him. Bobby Wagner needs to play better in 2021, or I'm certainly not going to be among those who is championing the idea of bringing him back, considering how much he costs and how much a certain other linebacker, Jordan Brooks, who I would argue was right there with KJ Wright ahead of Bobby Wagner as being Seattle's most effective all-around linebacker a year ago.
Now let's go to the secondary. No surprise, the Seahawks had no corners ranked in this year's top 32. Shaquille Griffin was, but he's now with the Jaguars. There's a lot of uncertainty there, so I wasn't surprised that there were no Seahawks corners in that top 32. Richard Sherman, I believe, is in the top 10 still. So if they end up bringing him back, then, you know, we can revisit that at some point if we want to. But safety is where things get interesting because the Seahawks had two Pro Bowl safeties in Jamal Adams and Quandre Diggs, but Somehow only one of those players was on the top 32 safety rankings. Jamal Adams coming in at number 10. When you consider the struggles he had early in the year in coverage, especially in that Patriots game, I can somewhat understand that ranking. I don't think there are nine safeties in the league that are better than Jamal Adams. I expect a better season from him in his second year with the Seahawks, especially because he's going to be healthier and hopefully he can stay healthy. But I understand the coverage issues probably are what dropped him down. But he's just such a rare talent, such a unique player with his ability to blitz off the edge, rush quarterbacks, broke the single-season defensive back record for sacks in just 12 games a year ago. So I can see how last year 10 being, you know, a reasonable ranking for him. But I think that he is better than that moving forward. What I don't understand is Quandre Diggs. In fact, I had a discussion on social media today with Quandre Diggs about this. I was pointing out that he was credited with 14 completions against him on 20 targets, and four of those six incompletions he intercepted. And of course, he had this to say: I played predominantly in the post, so how does Pro Football Focus have me getting targeted 20 times? No seams, no post, and I control the alley. That's my job. So let's just say that he was pretty skeptical on how the Pro Football Focus team reached their verdicts for these rankings in terms of stats. And obviously, he feels slighted not being on this list. And considering he was a Pro Bowler and he's one of only four safeties the last 2 years with eight or more interceptions, the fact that he is not in the top 10 or top 15 to me is embarrassing, let alone not being in the top 32 at all.
Yeah, it makes me feel like they just forgot about him. I mean, I don't know how else you of all the players that we've talked about, I think that Damian Lewis at the guard position, and I understand he's a rookie. I get that. But Quandre Diggs not being included among the top 32 safeties in the NFL, considering his ball hawking ways, considering the physicality with which he runs down the alley and puts ball carriers on their back. I mean, I get it. I saw some missed tackles. And the same thing I was being critical of Bobby Wagner a moment ago. We absolutely saw Quandre Diggs make some of those same mistakes. And the fact that Seattle's secondary especially was just absolutely torched in the first half of the season, well, then maybe those evaluators only watch football in September and October. I don't know. But I think when you start watching ball in November, December, and January, you saw that Seattle had the best safety play in all of the NFL, in my opinion. I think that Quandre Diggs, it's comical to not include him in the top 20 and probably should be in the top, you know, 10 to 15 kind of a range. Jamal Adams, again, I can understand. You know, maybe the fact that he is, or at least the perception that he is a little bit of a one-dimensional player. He's not quite the cover guy that a lot of safeties are. If you want a safety to play a certain role, Jamal Adams is not going to be that guy for you. I get all that. But at the same time, I think that both of Seattle's safeties were kind of criminally underrated, at least from the focus, or at least from the perspective of the PFF bunch.
How many times, I know the Seahawks gave a lot of passing yards up in the first half, but how many times did opponents beat them on posts and down the seam last year? I think you can count easily on one hand. It just didn't happen. And that's because of number 37. And really, he's number six now. He's changed jersey numbers, but last year he was wearing number 37. It's because of Quandre Diggs. He has been the equalizer back there. They really struggled with Tedrick Thompson back there trying to replace Earl Thomas when he bolted. That was not the answer, but training for Quandre Diggs has been the answer. He is the perfect player for Pete Carroll's scheme, playing that single deep coverage. And he really has erased those posts and seam routes for the most part. Teams just aren't completing those passes. They're finding other ways to move the ball through the air. But again, this is why, to me, I like the verbiage you used. It is comical to me that Quandre Diggs is not in the top 15, let alone the top 32 safeties in the league. That right there, to me, I try not to raise too much of a beef with these because they're just rankings, whatever. But that is one that makes me really question what they're evaluating at the safety position in particular. When we come back in the third quarter, we're going to start breaking down the Seahawks 90-man roster. It's 91 players this year because they have a player from the International Player Pathway Program that's on the roster that is exempt from counting against the 90-man. But we're going to be breaking down the first six players to kick off our countdown today. When we return, you're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Are you looking for a way to boost your workout game? Are you seeking a delicious protein bar without the sugar and carbs? Enter in the Built Bar, 18 amazing flavors, including nut and non-nut flavors. Some of the best ones, caramel brownie, cookies and cream, apple almond crisp, peanut butter, double chocolate. You're going to have a tough time eating just one. These bars are covered in 100% chocolate, soft, easy to chew. It's great for the health conscious guy. Lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. Bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, and they're great for a keto diet. Remember to use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your order. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me for our Wednesday episode, my co-host in crime, Rob Rang. It's hard to believe, Rob, we are less than 2 months away from the start of training camp. It looks like this is going to be a much more normal training camp. I'm anticipating there will at least be some fans in the stands for the first couple weeks of practice. And I'm anticipating that we're going to have our three preseason games. It's just going to feel much more normal than what 2020 did. And so it's going to be nice having 90 players out there. The Seahawks are going to be able to truly evaluate all those players with preseason reps, being able to have more traditional training camp practices. So keeping in mind that we're getting closer to the start of camp, we're going to be breaking down all 90 players on Seattle's roster, and we're going to be looking at best case and worst case scenarios for all 91 of these players. Again, they have an International Player Pathway Program player on their roster, so they have 91 players instead of 90. One thing we are going to avoid, you and I talked about this before recording today, that we are going to avoid injuries because that can happen to any one of these players playing the physical game of football. So we're going to exempt that from our analysis, but we're going to be looking at what the best case scenario is and worst case scenario on all 90 players, all 91 players on Seattle's roster. So without further ado, let's start at the quarterback position with a player that now has had his career come full circle. He was a 2018 seventh round pick out of Florida International, Alex Magoo. There's never been a question about the physical skills. The Seahawks really liked his throwing arm and his athleticism when he was coming out. That's why they drafted him. Unfortunately, his rookie year, he really struggled to learn the playbook during training camp. There were questions about his preparation, and they ended up trading for Brent Hundley. And Magoo spent the entire year in the practice squad. He's been with the Jaguars and the Texans the last 2 years. It just doesn't feel like this year training camp is going to work out much better for him, given the other quarterbacks that Seattle has in camp.
Well, I think that's a possibility. I mean, obviously, Russell Wilson's your starter. Geno Smith is your primary backup. And, you know, I think the Seahawks are pretty intrigued by Danny Etling. And he's got a little bit of a step up on Alex Magoo, of course, because Etling was available at the rookie mini camps that you and I had an opportunity to watch. And I thought that Etling threw the ball pretty well. That said, I think that Magoo is a more physically talented player. He's 6'3", 215 pounds. He's got more mobility than Danny Etling possesses. In my opinion, he's got a stronger arm than Danny Etling possesses. He just doesn't have Etling's consistency, his savvy, his touch downfield with the football. So to me, the upside with Alex Magoo is that, again, he has some physical talent. As you mentioned, he was drafted by the Seahawks. Obviously, they felt comfortable enough to draft him out of FIU years ago and then be able to bring him back after a couple of years of bouncing around in the AFC South. So the Seahawks feel very comfortable with him. I think the downside is that he's just a camp arm.
Yeah, I think the best case scenario for him is that he has a really good preseason. Maybe that's good enough for him to be your practice squad quarterback. He ends up beating Danny Etling out for that role. It sounds like they're going to have the expanded practice squads here to stay. So that gives them more incentive to hold on to an extra quarterback. But I don't see him unseating Geno Smith with his starting experience in the NFL. He is going to be Russell Wilson's backup. And so worst case scenario is he really just struggles. And that could mean this was his last NFL opportunity. If he's the fourth quarterback in the depth chart and the Seahawks cut him and he's not on the practice squad, that could be the end of the line. So there is a lot on the line for players like that who have bounced around with multiple teams. Now going to the outside, our next player here, Darvin Kidzie, who played at North Texas and Texas Southern at the college level, 6 foot, 180 pounds. He actually has some NFL experience, regular season experience. He played in 5 games for the Washington football team in 2018 and 2019, recorded 1 catch for 8 yards, has played some special team snaps. That's really what he was known for at the college level. He's returned punts and kicks. He was with the Seahawks in December on their practice squad. The fact that he's got some experience and he's a good special teams player certainly helps his cause, but this looks like a case where, especially if the Seahawks go out and get Julio Jones, obviously that's going to change the dynamic for a lot of receivers on the depth chart in Seattle. But it looks to me like there are simply way too many players on this depth chart that are more talented. I just don't see any way that Kidzie's anything beyond simply a camp body. I just don't see enough opportunities for him.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. It certainly feels that way, that he's just got the deck is stacked up against him. I love that you mentioned the special teams experience. I think that is Kidzie's opportunity because a lot of the wide receivers that Seattle has brought in, you know, they'll compete on special teams. They'll try, but they are not necessarily very productive in doing so. Maybe from a defensive side of the ball is playing gunner, but they don't have that return experience, the reliable hands that Kidzie showed during his college career. As a punt returner and a kick returner, you mentioned the fact that he played in Washington. So, you know, this is a guy, a young man who has, you know, has some experience in that regard. So I think that he's going to get an interesting opportunity here, but he's got to absolutely take full advantage of it, because I would argue that safety and wide receiver are arguably the two strongest positions for the Seahawks. And so if there's going to be any one of these diamond in the rough talents that's going to be able to step up, it may require somebody else falling back.
Now, coming in next at tight end, we broke down this player a week ago because he's only been with the team for a week, but Cam Sutton is a player that continues to intrigue me because the Seahawks do not have very many tight ends in the roster. They have 6 of them currently on the 90-man roster. You've got Will Dissly, Gerald Everett, and Colby Parkinson. After that, you've got Tyler Mabry. We'll talk Nick Gugemos. We'll be talking about him here in a minute. But Cam Sutton's got an opportunity here as a player at 6'6", 249 pounds, a former receiver moved to tight end. He's a good athlete. He's got an opportunity to be able to carve out a practice squad spot. And maybe, just maybe, if he's able to outperform Tyler Mabry, who had a really good camp a year ago, maybe this is a guy that could play his way into consideration for a 4th tight end. I don't know that the Seahawks will keep 4 tight ends with the way their roster is now constructed and the offensive scheme change, having Shane Waldron as your coordinator, but I am absolutely intrigued by this kid. He spent time with the Panthers last year in training camp and then somehow didn't end up on anybody's practice squad. He's a very raw player that doesn't have a ton of experience at tight end, but he's got the size and athletic attributes that you're looking for. And so he is somebody that I've got circled, at least to start off training camp. I'm just going to be curious to see what he looks like out there, where he fits in this tight end competition.
Oh, I am as well. I think, you know, again, we just talked about the wide receiver position and safety, I think are two very strong positions for the Seahawks. Tight end is not. You've got a player in Will Dissly, who I like Will Dissly, but he struggled with his durability. He's not going to run away from anybody. I like Gerald Everett, but he's only on a 1-year deal. Colby Parkinson, of course, you know, is coming off of a rookie season in which he just had so few opportunities. You don't know what he really is going to be. And then you have the 3 undrafted free agents in Joshua Moon and Cam Sutton. And then, as you mentioned, with Nick Gugemos. I think that there is an opportunity for one of those undrafted free agents to really kind of step up and surprise the way that Mabry did a year ago. And with Sutton, I mean, 6'6", 249 pounds as a former wide receiver, to me, all of the same things that were so intriguing about Stephon Sullivan when Seattle drafted him out of LSU a couple of years ago as a former wide receiver, making that transition to tight end. The similar kind of things are very intriguing about Sutton. former wide receiver, making that same transition from Fresno State. I want to see this young man in person, see what he's able to do. I think especially between he and Gugamos, those are the two guys who just have a different level of size, speed, and we'll see which of the two of them has a little bit of ball skills.
Let's talk defensive tackles now, because Walter Parmoor, you and I, okay, I'm going to admit, I was just joking about this before the show, but it sounds like it should be a character. He sounds like he should be a puppet on the Jeff Dunham show. But Walter Parmoor, 6'4", 320 pounds, a big guy in the middle. He's bounced around a bit. He was with the Texans when he first was coming out of Missouri. Then he was in the XFL, a couple games, the Houston Roughnecks. Spent time with the Cowboys practice squad last year, dressed for a couple of games, I believe. Another big body. We know that that's a position where depth isn't necessarily great, especially after losing Jaron Reed. So he might be another player that just by the numbers aspect, if he's able to go out and exceed expectations, that maybe, just maybe, he could be a practice squad player as well. I don't see him being somebody that can sneak onto the 53-man roster, but there's not a lot of depth, so you never know. I think that him and Sutton, those two players – compared to the first two we talked about, I think that they have a little better situation going into training camp if they're really able to seize their opportunity, seize the reps they get on the practice field and in preseason games.
Yeah, I hate to agree with you again, but I do here. I think just defensive tackle with the loss of Jaron Reed, defensive tackle is a little bit more wide open than it's been in the past. Seattle has shown a willingness to give undrafted free agents to the defensive tackle position an awful lot of play. I mean, we just were talking about Puna Ford and how highly he was ranked by the Pro Football Focus folks. Of course, you have players like Brian Monet, Cedric Lattimore, who have made this roster after being undrafted free agents. And so with Walter Parmoor, I mean, he's a completely different size and talented guy, 6'4", 320 pounds. He's not Puna Ford. He's not Cedric Lattimore. You're not looking for interior pressure from him. You're looking for bulk, for power at the point of attack. I think that Brian Monet is able to solidify his role on this team, then it's going to be pretty hard for Parmoor to be able to crash the party. But at the same time, I think if Brian Monet does not step up his level of play, then this could be an opportunity for Parmoor to be able to do that. He plays college ball at Missouri, go up against SEC competition week in and week out. I think that he's going to be up to the challenge to be able to give Brian Monet and some of Seattle's other bigger defensive tackles a little bit of a run for their money.
We also can't discount that Al Woods is coming back as well. So that's another big body that he's going to have to compete against that likely is going to be on the roster. So, again, I think the practice squad is that best case scenario for him. But wrapping up our first wave of players here in a 90-player countdown, we've got a couple of intriguing ones here. Nick Gugamos, the tight end out of St. Thomas, as well as Joshua Moon, a safety out of Georgia Southern. Gugamos really only played a handful of college snaps, and St. Thomas is not a Division I or even an FCS school. It's a Division II school, and so he doesn't offer much experience. He hasn't played football since 2018. Pete Carroll told me in a press conference last week that they were showing highlights from him at practice because they didn't have game highlights. So this is a guy that's extremely raw, but he's also 6'5", around 245 pounds, runs in the 4.5s, has a 39-inch vertical jump, and a bunch of other really good athletic metrics. So, again, like Sutton, you're looking at a player that has the size and athleticism. If you can develop him, could end up being a really surprising player. And the fact that his dad played for Pete Carroll with the Minnesota Vikings in the 80s certainly didn't hurt his cause either. But Gugamos, like Sutton, is another player that offers some intrigue going into camp. Moon, he's playing that safety spot. Going to be really difficult for anybody to crash that party with the depth and talent, especially Marquise Blair coming back from injury. I don't see any of these undrafted safeties that are participating in camp having any chance at making the team unless that player ends up just being a superstar on special teams. Then maybe they can carve out a role, at least in the practice squad, but it is going to be one heck of an uphill climb for Moon, especially considering he hasn't played for 2 years.
Yeah, it is going to be difficult for Moon. And there's no question about it. As talked about, safety is one of the strongest positions for the Seahawks. The possibility of others struggling with injuries, you know, with Marquise Blair especially, and the wild card factor that he is, because he can offer you something at the corner and safety position. I think that could steal spots from lots of guys. Moon is more of a traditional safety, also on special teams. But at the same time, I just think that it's going to be pretty difficult for him to be able to crack this roster without there being some type of significant injuries to some of the other players who are currently higher up on Seattle's depth chart. But a talented player who, as you mentioned, had played some ball in the NFL with Jacksonville before. The fact that Jacksonville has so many coaches, so many players now, or former Seattle guys, clearly there is a similar line of thinking there. Yeah, and Gugemos, to me, he's the intriguing one. You know, you kind of mentioned Jeff Dunham, the comedian who often has the, you know, the little quote-unquote dummies or mannequins or whatever it is that you want to call him. I mean, in terms of kind of Gugemos, he looks almost like a mannequin, and he is perfectly proportioned, exactly what you want a football player to look like, just big and strong and a fluid athlete and all those kind of things. At the same time, he almost looks like a mannequin in the few opportunities I had to watch him try to corral a pass. He just looked like he couldn't locate the football as well. So that's something that Seattle has a talented player here, but he's really going to have to step up his level of play if he is going to be able to collect very many NFL paychecks.
There's no question that Gugemos is the most raw player that's going to be in training camp for the Seahawks, but there might be a lot of upside there. I do think we saw some stone hands and we saw some recognition issues reading the football, but again, just not a lot of experience. The Seahawks are taking a chance on him because of his size and athletic testing, and if he's able to improve rapidly with his football skills, then maybe he would justify keeping him, stashing him on the practice squad to develop him for a year. Maybe this time next year, he will be a competent NFL tight end that can compete for a roster spot. Make sure to check out the Locked On Today podcast hosted by Peter Bukowski. He updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts. You can follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. Make sure to check out Rob at Rob Rang. Check out Locked On Seahawks on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and the all-new Odyssey app. That's AUDACY. Coming up on tomorrow's show, we'll continue our 90-man roster countdown, plus a look at the tight end group. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. Go Hawks.